Good day, and welcome to the KUKA Capital Market Day conference call at Hannover Messe. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Andreas Spitzauer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Andreas Spitzauer. I'm head of investor relations, and I want to welcome you to our Capital Market Day here at Hannover Fair. With me today are Dr. Till Reuter, the CEO of KUKA Group, then Mr. Lamper, he's the CEO of Robotics, then we have Mr. Fuller, kind of our head of the hub of the new R&D center, which we have in Austin, and Larry Drake, he's the CEO of the systems division, and he kind of main responsibility for whole Americas. Today's conference is being recorded. You can find the presentation on our homepage and also kind of later on kind of the voiceover and the question answer session. And with this, I'd like to hand over to Dr. Till Reuter.
Thank you, Andreas. And in the name of myself and my colleagues, I have a warm welcome to you, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to KUKA, welcome to Hannover. We are delighted to show you our company and the booth later. And we have lots of topics which we want to share with you. And also today you have the opportunity to talk to our colleagues here to get more detailed information about robotics, about technology, and also about systems and how we work together. Come back, we had already a very great start in Hannover. You're laughing. It's a we had really a great start. It started with the opening ceremony where 7 of our robots were participating in the opening show. It was great to have them and to see everybody what KUKA robots can do was the man-machine interaction in the lineup of people. And then yesterday, as you can see in the picture, our Chancellor, Frau Merkel, and Barack Obama, they were shaking hands with the robot. And I think it's great for us and it's good for the team that we have this interest in robotics. And I think what we are doing today here, see on the right side, hello, Industry 4.0, we go digital. We are going to continue what we have shown last year, and we're going from technologies which we showed, but now technology gets into solution and solution for the smart factory of the future. 4.0 is the key topic, and I think what we want to show you what's the influence of our business, how we drive it, and what is the chance with our customers to change business models. I think that's all about today. The factory is the future and how we increase efficiency through this. Here you have a chance to go to the booth, so we have also on the picture the booth. The booth looks like a spaceship, so Spaceship KUKA is ready to take off. We had a tremendous journey over the last 6 years, but I clearly see that we have the next level, the next journey is the journey of digitalization. Most of you know from automotive to automation, from 80% automotive to 50% automotive, and now we increase the software piece. Today we have approximately 400 software developers. We're going up to 800 to 900. That means the software business will be a bigger part of our business. Coming to a known page for you, our future and our outlook. Peter and I gave up the target last year, though more than 1 year ago, that we want to grow the company, and we at this time we have 2.2 billion, to grow the company to 4 to 4.5 billion and have at least 7.5% EBIT margin. We believe that with 4.0 there will be higher margin, and I think also on the sales and revenue side, I'm very confident that we're going to meet this targets. Remember, in 2014 we had only 2.2 billion, so we went one big step, and I will tell you why we are really confident that we're going to get this done. One big aspect is China. And Stefan will also explain to you that China is changing the way we are doing business. China is changing the way robotics is seen. Why? Today is always the biggest robotic market, but also, you know, there's lots of process which has not been automated, and rising labor costs and quality is an important part. And I think also what we see that local companies increase the level of automation and get also more pressure to automate. And that is our great opportunity for KUKA to grow in China. Today in China, we have approximately 450 million of revenue with a good margin. One sector Stefan is focusing is on the 3C sector, 3C, computer, communications, and consumer electronics. short life cycles of these products, short life cycle requirements on the fast and flexible assembly of the products. And we today, Stefan shows, we are presenting even a new guy to our family, very small one, yes. 3 kilo, 3 kilo Agilus. So welcome the new robot to our family. And this family is for us a new, we can with this attract new customers, a new market. And Stefan will tell you that it's really a big new market with more than 100 million potential only for this robot. So we have China, we have China Industry as one example, 3C, and then we're going to some acquisitions. We acquired clearly Rice Robotics. We were combining Rice Robotics together with parts of systems to Kuka Industries. And we also went into Swisslog, into logistics, new markets, e-commerce, and the opportunity to work and to have benefits from mobility. Today, meanwhile, 50% of our business accounts for General Industry. And what we see is clearly that automotive will grow something between 0 and 5%. And GI, the idea is that we work as we grow between 5 and 10%. And that's also GI will drive us to meet the 4 to 4.5 billion. The another strong driver we focus now is 4.0, Industry 4.0, where we're in the middle of things, where we see things changing on the product side and things changing also on the process and on the optimization and the plant side. Some people late arriving, please have seats. Next chart. So, global megatrends, nothing new. Demographic change. Global population growing, industrial nations shrinking. That means smaller numbers of people working. Baby boomers getting out of service in a couple of years, so we need innovative robots to help us to get the work done in Europe and in US. And that's something where we have new technologies, more easy programmable, mobile robotic systems, but in the end, innovation can help to have an answer on the demographic changes in the industrial nation. Customization, you want to have individualized products, you want to order by mouse click, you want to have it in 24 hours. A big change in value change, a fastening of value change, and I think what we see, we are looking for new ways of logistics and also new ways of production. Resource efficiency, and I come to the technology change, the digitalization at the last point. Resource efficiency is very important, and also I will show you once we optimize the full line, the full production based on data, we can have a good benefit on the resource efficiency. But I think for us today important is the fourth industrial revolution, which is presenting also a challenge to society. I think the possibility of collecting and utilizing data and gaining information will shape and will change the society. We have 15 years of internet for us on the consumer side. And if you look back like 15 years ago, what it changed to us. And I think now we just have a couple of years of Internet of Things, and we are in the starting point of what is changing us on the production side. So the Amazon and eBay changed our consumer behavior, and now in the next phase, I think it is the big data has a big impact on production and logistics, and we will see that we have to make efficient use. We can have predictive maintenance of data on the production side. How are we going at Kuka to answer on this? I think Kuka is in unique position because we have a combination of intelligent machines, our robots, our AGVs, platform products. Robots we build not only for one industry, we can build robots across industry. The same more or less robot you use in automotive, you can use in healthcare. And I think that is one of our platforms, same we are going to do on AGV, so mobile platforms. And I will tell you more like in a couple of minutes, how do we understand intelligent machine? What changed over the last years and what's going to change in the future? And then the second part is we, people like Larry in our organization, understand customer processes. So we understand how to weld cars. We understand how to rivet setting in aerospace. We will understand electronics, the handling and the task of electronics, and we understand lots of in metal industry. And this process know-how we have to get into the digital world, have a digital shadow, and then use data to optimize these processes. But what you see, out of the three, we already have two things. We have intelligent machines. We do know the processes. Now we're going to add, with Christian's help and David's help, our CTO Christian Schlögl and David, We will add the data piece. We will start a big data 4.0 company within KUKA to really add the third piece out of the equation, and then we can offer solutions for our customers to optimize whole systems. So platform machines, intelligent machines combined with vertical intelligence. So going forward, starting with the intelligent machine, how does robots become more intelligent? You know, a couple of years ago, robot is working behind a fence. We took away the fence. Robot and man are working together, so human-robot collaboration. And then we get into the mobility, so we make robots more flexible. In the past, robot was fixed, so it can only one task. If it's getting mobile, it can do different tasks. And then we had also the intelligence, the learning programs, how to get smarter. And this will allow that the robot's getting much more flexible, easier to use, with more tasks. And that's very important that we have a more intelligent machine and we can define what is for us an intelligent machine. So intelligent machine, a robot, an AGV is a machine which can identify itself. Which machine I am? With whom can I speak? Which information, which program do I have? Which task can I do? And I think some decisions I can do on my own, and the more learning programs I have, the more autonomous I can work. Where I am, mobility very important. And then I think I have some sensors, I have data available, and I can always connect to the cloud and see what is more available. And I think if you now look at what the product, the single machine can do, going to the customer side, because that's most important. So if I do have the data of the robot, and I think next time David, we do the little use case here where we really get a robot here up to the screen, I can see how the robot's running, and if I know the data better, I can give you higher uptime. I can give you energy efficiency because you have maybe a better management of the robot, higher flexibility, lower inventory, so faster time to market, so we save time for the customer. And this is, that's the one part of KUKA where we talk about the intelligent machine. Now, at KUKA, we have the opportunity not only to talk about single machines, but we talk about domains. So today, we are building the plant of an Audi, of a Daimler, of a Volkswagen, building complex systems, integrating our machines, but also conveyors and different CNC machines, some Trumpf machines. So we automate by integrating lots of machines into a network. And what we're going to do is we want to more manage this ecosystem. And the ecosystem, for example, the domain can start into a production line for cars. And if you have the full data of the line, what you can do, you have big data correlation between different machines. You can optimize the more complex system. You have a transparency of all the machines. You know where you do maintain it at one time. You get alerted if something happens. And you can also give forecasts, and therefore you can optimize the whole system across boundaries. What does it mean for us? So with all the information, we can, on the one hand, getting into new business models. We are much more higher. I think we can, with the data and with the flexible lines, we can much easier reconfigure lines. We can fast react on situations. We can optimize energies. And we can also predict the future. And I think this is something where, besides a single machine, we can also optimize a group of machines in a line. And this is one of the businesses where we also will focus on, that we, besides the single machine, also are going to optimize ecosystems in the verticals we are. Automotive, aerospace, consumer, metal, and so on. That's an example on the automotive. So, you know, we want to grow in GI, as mentioned always. Expect something like 10% in this GI. But we are number one. We want to keep the number one position in automotive. Automotive helped us to grow. Automotive is also innovation driver. I had in the morning a discussion here. One question from the audience came in about from the government. There was a statement: is Germany focusing too much on automotive? Should be focusing on other industries? I think we have the chance that in Germany lots of business is depending on automotive, but I think it's all our duty to also look across and to be much more open to see there are lots of benefits from automotive, but there are benefits from the consumer world, from different industries, and I think we have to find a way to combine these different developments into our products, into our solutions. But coming into more detail, what is Now, talking concrete about the customer, you know, what we can offer today is value as a service. So we can optimize the plant. We can optimize our robots in the plant of Daimler, Volkswagen. We can optimize single robots. Modular as a service operating model. So instead of optimizing our robots, we can also sell welding spots. So I tell the customer, you don't have to look at the component. You don't look at the line. I just tell you, you can buy 20 million welding spots. One car does have 1,400. So I don't sell component and machinery. I sell solutions. This goes into the module. And then I think the next part, the question is, we can have a platform so where we also cooperate with other partners. In the end, we can have whole infrastructure, the supplier part, including, and that is some, one example, we can define the ecosystem. Is the ecosystem only the line for the car body? Is the logistics included? And I think the ecosystem depends really on how we, where we get the biggest benefit from our, for our customer, with our customer. And I think what we do have here is we have the intelligent machines. We do know the processes. And with David and our 4.0 team, Christian's team, we will have also the data understanding to optimize our process and optimize and digitalize the fabric of tomorrow. So I think that's something which is a clear page, and hopefully you give me 2 minutes to explain. 4.0 means a lot of things are changing, digitalization, availability of data, and then focus and also getting to the relevant data, because we have so much data, so many data, and we have to come to the relevant data. And for us also means we have to come to the relevant topics we are focusing on and topics we are not doing. So KUKA in the past was always very smart in not focusing on mainstream technology. Mainstream has to be done by big companies. So what we are going to do is orange. So on the one hand, clearly robots and process. We are focusing on the intelligent machine. We are connecting the machine. We also have this software control layer. We are not going to have own communication devices or communication technology. So one example, we're talking to Huawei about 5G communication. So by 2020, you might have a communication. You don't need cable. You go wireless 5G communication real time. That will be an opportunity. We discuss this. When if something's happened, we can use it for our robots. Next level, we go into the edge FOC, which means kind of cloud technology on the shop floor, a bigger controller. We are not in the control. We do our own controllers, but we are in the end not doing controllers for everybody. But we have a participation in the company is called Nebbiolo, Italian word for FOC, which is a kind of cloud architecture we can use if people are more sensitive, don't want to send data in the cloud. You also have real time in this Nebbiolo box. So one way to get data collected on the shop floor. Next layer, cloud platform. We will do this with partners. So today we announced that we are also we're starting our own cloud company called Conyun. Con from connecting, Yun from Chinese cloud. And this I think is a great name because also shows that we are globally and you have to get the business model across region. So on this side we have a partner Infosys, which is helping Infosys. David will tell them about Infosys, a big IT company having hundreds of thousands of people in the world to help us in building IT dashboards for our customers, but based on our requirements. Cloud service, that's something where KUKA again, we want to do cloud service, we want to do software, we want to do updates, efficiency programs, upgrade of programs, energy programs. That is KUKA doing, and that's where KUKA is focusing on getting service, asset efficiency, big data management, predictive maintenance, learning programs to our customers. Secondly, marketplace, we will have our own marketplace, a KUKA marketplace, and on this way we are going to cooperate with Salesforce. Salesforce helping us on the CRM side, but clearly it's good to focus on this channel and to see what we can with Salesforce also on the 4.0. So that's our stack, and now we talked about the pure technical side, now we go on the left. Is a communication to the man-machine interface, and that's very important. Talking to people in the industry on the office space where you are working every day, There's no German company. There's Microsoft. They're only American companies. And what we want to have, we want to keep the interface to the customer on the shop floor. It should be also managed sometimes in some areas with Kuka, that we are the interface to the customers, because only the interface does have the contact to the customer. So your machine interface is very important. We want to not control, but we want to drive this and focus on the human machine interface, because in the end we are building robots and lines for men, and I think this interaction is very important for us. So that's kind of a roadmap, and you see where we're focusing on and where we do have partners. So what's in for the investors, and what is your question to Andreas afterwards? We were developing from 2009 to 2015. At this time, 2009, 80% automotive, 20% GI, 100 people in software, 100 people in hardware. 2015, we have 500 people in R&D, 100 people hardware, 400 people in software. And our assumption, where also David is focusing, in 2020, we are going up to more than 1,000 developers, 100 in hardware, 400 plus in software, and another 400 to 500 in software, IT, web-based people, software people. And this clearly is our move towards more software. We won't become a pure software company, but clearly software is much more important for us. And this will also be shown in the people we have, the competence we have, the know-how we have, and also it should show in the offering to our customers. So, as mentioned before, we have, besides our own investment in R&D, going up to 1,000 people, we also have changed over last year a little bit the way we looked at it. And let me start from the right. So increase R&D workforce, own R&D, set up Industry 4.0 team, including Konjun. We have pilot started, and also we have already started with 4.0 solution in our own facilities. We have corporations, Huawei for 5G communication. Infosys be helping us in building dashboards for our customers. We get asset management and others from Salesforce, starting from CRM and also helping us in the Internet of Things for certain customers. So focus on own R&D, cooperation, and then we have done some investments. And investments are little speedboats where we think that we have great R&D people in our own company, but sometimes you need some speedboats to look into certain extra verticals, some technology where you just want to have a look into it. And there was a reason why Peter, myself, and the team here looked into some of the startups. So for example, Roboception. Roboception is new technology. It's regarding perception. So it's a camera system, a very easy camera system, where you have in the end, in the cloud, all pictures available, and you match the picture of the camera with the available information in the cloud. You have a connect. You know this is, for example, a cup. It's a bottle. And also the next step, you have behind this bottle, you have a defined cribbing strategy. What does it mean? It's much faster. You don't have to program each step, but by defining, by having the interaction with the cloud, and by accepting that it's a bottle, I have automatically the next steps available, and I don't have to define or program single steps. It means software gets much more efficient. Nebbiolo, we have a shareholding below 25%, so a small stake in Nebbiolo. It's a great idea, a spin-off of Cisco, out of Cisco, and it shows this cloud technology on the shop floor. Maybe you can see it later here on our booth, and it also has a different, then it is much easier for customers because security level is much higher, because on your own side, so you can also have some cloud architecture in your production space. And then thirdly, KB. We also see KB close to our booth, a small company, innovative technology focused guys, focusing on a niche, focusing on 3C robotics, 3C customers, in parallel or complementary to our own 3-kilo robot. KB is more focused on the testing and inspection of products where it needs sensitivity. Our robot is the ever fastest robot in 3-kilo. And KB is a different animal. It has sensitivity, and therefore it can do plug testing and other things. And Kuka does have 40%, and it's really also an example of how we have in specific markets small power boat, small speed boat next to us to get even faster and to increase our R&D power. Thanks so far. Handing over to Stefan. Stefan will tell you a little bit about robotics, what we are doing in robotics, and then we have later time for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Till. My name is Stefan Lampa. I'm the CEO of KUKA Robotics. I've been in the robotics business for most of my life, more than 25 years now. Hard to believe when you see me, I guess, but I started very young. Not too many laughing at that joke, okay?
It was his birthday.
Exactly, we had my birthday, by the way. Anyhow.
Sunday.
Yeah. So I will talk about KUKA's focus on GI. That is the main topic of my talk. I'm a little bit stressed right now because last time I did this speech was a couple of hours ago. We got a power shortage in the middle of my speech, so let's hope that it wasn't me that caused that. Okay, this is what we see here is the three main focuses of the robotics business. Automotive, as Till said, that is our backbone. It will be our main focus. We will assure that we maintain our number one position in automotive going forward. Number two, service on the left side there is something that we often forget to talk about, but maybe that is the most important reason why we have so loyal customers. Customers that stay with us for 10, 20, and even more years. Because the focus we have with the service offer is to take care of the assets after they're installed. Make sure that the customer can utilize the asset that he puts into his manufacturing, and we make sure that that's happening in a good way. That is creating loyalty, and it's also a good revenue creator for us. And then the thing I'm going to talk about, general industry. The general industry is the fastest moving market and the fastest growing market in robotics, and I will explain a little bit more why. Let's look into it. This is the background of the market situation. 2015, in the non-automotive space of six axis or more robots, there was about 100,000 arms sold. We project that will double to 2020, up to 200,000 arms. So the growth rate in this space is amazing. Why is there a growth space? I will talk a little bit more about that. But this is the reason, basic reason, simple reason to understand why we are focusing so much in the future going into the general industry space. Okay, let's move on. What are then the key success factors in general industry? It's quite different when you compare to the automotive industry. Remember, automotive industry is a very mature industry. It has worked with automation for many, many years. It is highly robotized today. That is not the case in the general industry space. So we have to do things differently. Number one, we need to build up a global organization to be close to the customer. Number two, we cannot go to the customer with a robot as a component. We have to go to the customer with an application. We call it the ready-to-use robot. And obviously the number three, and we show that at the show here today, that is to expand our product portfolio so we have the right basic products for our customers and for this market. Okay, let's go through these three success factors more in detail. General industry is growing fast, I said. And where is it growing fast? It is in Asia. Very much focused in Asia, and here we show a couple of the countries where we will build up a stronger presence, and we have done so over the last years. China I will go into later, but let's start maybe with a little bit less known countries, at least less known in Europe when it comes to robot automation. South Korea is one of the biggest robot markets. We are building up our presence in order to serve the South Korean robot market. And we are already seeing great successes in that space, leading to growth already this year. What are we doing there? We are obviously expanding our sales network, but we are also very much expanding our service network. And we are building up the knowledge in how to utilize robotics because we need to have it close to the customer. Taiwan, very much a growing market as well. It is, I think, number four, number five, depending on how you look at it from a robotics volume standpoint, and is growing rapidly. here we get very much into the electronic space. Electronics is very much what the Taiwanese robot users are focusing on today. We have a strong team in place, and we keep on further expanding it. And then we have the countries we have been in for quite some time, Thailand, Malaysia. Here we are strengthening the presence a little bit. You can see that there is a little dot there also at Vietnam. We are strongly looking at Vietnam. We haven't opened up an office there, but I project that we will do this over during this year. Good. China then. China is changing robotics. China has been the factory of the world. That has been based upon low-cost labor, and those days are coming to an end. So there is a high number of people working in Chinese industry that will turn into robotic or automated applications going forward. Changing working conditions, people don't want to be into these environments anymore. Lack of professional skilled workers based on the same thing, and increasing labor cost. We start seeing something that I often talk about. It's the beginning of peak labor. It happens in China, interestingly enough. Good. Success factor number two. We need to know how robots are used. In the past, KUKA focused very much on optimizing on the product level. Now we optimize on how our robots are used. I talked about it earlier. Ready-to-use robots is what we call it. What you see here on the right-hand side is a robot ready-equipped to do electronic screwing of the small electronics parts. These are 1 millimeter screws that has the same height of the screw as width of the head of the screw. Today, this is done by manual people, a tremendously difficult work that very few people can do, and the people that does it for long typically get damaged. They typically have problems, different kind of labor, different kind of anatomic problems. With this solution, we have a chance to take away those jobs and make them a lot better. These are the factories. These are the way they look today. Electronics factories, this is the way they look. We have customers. We have different applications where we have hundreds of thousands of people sitting in 60 by 60 centimeter areas. This is not a place we want to have our children in the future, and that is happening obviously in China and in Asia. These applications will go robotic, and we are seeing that. Reasons why, as I said, the change in working conditions, but also because of the shorter product cycles. We've seen that in the electronics industry, the product lifetime is getting shorter all the time. Higher volumes. We also see a need for customizing the product, and robotics is really good when you want to customize it. And we need to do it with global standards. This cannot be done from local companies. This needs to be done by global companies that can provide global standard. And KUKA is a global company. Okay, let's move into number three. This is the product end of it. Here you see now a complete six-axis robot portfolio where we go all the way from 3 kilo. This is our new baby we are introducing this week here in Hanover, up to our legendary 1.3-ton Titan robot. And if you want to feel the power of our big robots, I would like to invite you to our robot coaster and turn up the speed on that one, and you can feel that KUKA has a lot of power in its robotic arms. I'm pretty scared when I do that. But
program one and two.
Exactly. My kids make me do it, though, every once in a while. So this is the product. We are completing our product portfolio, and this is very important because we did not qualify in all areas in the electronics industry in the past because we didn't have the small arm. Now today we have the small arm, and the small arm will pull through a lot of the medium-sized arms as well and some few of the big ones. Good. Next one. Here we have it. We are extremely proud of it. It is the fastest robot in its range. This is a very crowded field. A lot of companies have robots here, but the market has been waiting for us bringing a robot out. We are very loyal to the KUKA DNA. That means quality. We have a premium product. We have placed it very, very competitively, we have changed the way we design the robot, make sure that we are absolutely focusing on the total cost of ownership, but at the same time also being extremely competitive when it comes to both the cost and the price. A new way of working where we have invited new suppliers from all over the world helping us design this beautiful machine. I hope you can take some good pictures and look at it out there. Good. Then Till talked about how we work in new ways. We really believe that a lot of the innovation happening in the robotic space will happen with companies that are in smaller formats, where the innovation and the freedom flows, and sometimes in bigger companies like KUKA, where we follow processes, sometimes that is slightly limited. We have Franca out next to our booth. It's a company called KB, extremely innovative. They have brought out a new concept for an arm, seventh axis sensible arm, sensitive arm, that is very much focused at the electronics industry. Please take a look at it. I think this is something new totally in the robotics industry. You want to say something, Till, here?
No, can I say something about the complementarity of the Bose product, the street view?
You want me to say it? You trust me on that one? I'll do that then. So the 3-kilo robot that we are launching is a high-speed industrial robot that obviously needs to be in a cage because it's fast. It can hurt someone. But this one is totally safe. This is a robot that will work directly together with operators just the way that our LBR EVA groundbreaking technology does. So it's totally two complementary robots. We often get this question, but it's totally complementary. One is going very much into the traditional industrial application, while this one we are focusing very, very much towards the electronics testing application that today is fully, fully manual. Thank you very much, Till, for that one. Okay, let me summarize what I just said. We have the three main focuses for KUKA. It is service, make sure the customer is happy over the lifetime of his capital investment. Number two, automotive. We will maintain our number one position in automotive, and now we're adding the third leg to that stool to make it very balanced, and it's our general industry offer. We do that by improving and bringing out new products now, and you see the 3-kilo robots out there, and you will see a lot of interesting things we're getting out. And we do it by providing to the market and our integrators ready-to-use robots, included application knowledge in a package. Thanks a lot for listening to me. And now I'm going to hand over to my dear colleague, David Fuller.
Thank you, Stefan. My name is David Fuller. I have 20 years of expertise developing software. I'm relatively new to KUKA and extremely excited to be here. I have a technical focus on cloud, web, and mobile software. And today I want to share a vision of KUKA R&D and how the technology we're working on will serve as a growth driver for the businesses of the folks here at the table with me today. We've said several times today that KUKA is a global company, and I believe I represent that fact as I've been hired and I work in Austin, Texas. A lovely town. You're welcome to come join us, have some great barbecue. Why is KUKA going global? If you look at its ratio of engineers in Augsburg, Germany today versus rest of world, it's roughly 10 times to one. It's a fairly Germano-centric engineering staff. What we've realized, despite early days globalization of engineering development was typically driven by cost. And while you can have some elements of cost saving in going global, it's really about talent. So if you look at the Germanic core technology base, it's extremely excellent in mechanical design and mechatronics. Other parts of the world have developed other expertise that are extremely attractive when trying to service this merger of hardware and software with Industry 4.0. So for example, in the U.S., we have a lot of strong cloud providers like Google. Now, at the same time, Stefan referenced the going global and servicing the local markets. And so we have roughly 25 employees in China today, so that we can serve the market with the right local costs, with dedicated competencies for technologies. And if you look at China in particular, they're extremely well known for excellent mass production in electronics, and that's critical to Stefan's general industry strategy. I think one key point from an investment community point of view, and I take it as a serious responsibility in R&D, is that TIL has trusted us with a multi-year investment strategy where R&D has to deliver the goods on these technologies so that we have the growth drivers we need to sustain a healthy business. Now, I think in what I consider to be one of the most understatements and ever spoken on the world is a Bill Gates quote from 1999. A fundamental new rule for business is that the internet changes everything. You can look at some basic consumer examples that 15 years ago, when I wanted to read the news, I got a newspaper, or if I was calling people, I had a landline. And you can see today that essentially we do all of that through digitalization, where we have a single device, or device convergence is what it was once called, where all of that is essentially completely digitized. Now, I have to say I was living in Austin, Texas at the time in the advent of the internet. I graduated from school in 1994 in a degree in computer science, and I will say that I completely missed the first wave of the internet. But we are now standing on the second wave of the internet, which is the convergence of the disruption of this internet impacting manufacturing. And I absolutely am not going to miss out on that, and I think TIL has delivered a strategy that says, when we disrupt manufacturing, that the future of that will be orange and will be driven by KUKA. So some macro trends, in addition to just the basic and obvious disruption of everything on the factory floor because of the internet, is that the way in which software and hardware is developed is completely changing. There's been a traditional role of a CIO inside of a company, and you've had kind of the CTO on the product side. What's really happening is if the internet, which was traditionally an IT technology, is running into the factory floor, which has operating technology, you essentially end up with one technology stack that services both IT and OT concerns. And in this particular case, really the end goal of Industry 4.0 is to deliver business value in action, where you've essentially connected the concrete floor to the carpet floor, that you have a harmonious visibility into your assets in the factory and their impact on your business. And then you can optimize that cycle. In a nutshell, when you have IT and OT together, you get Industry 4.0 or the Internet of Things. So these technologies and these macro trends, they've all been transforming and evolving KUKA's product portfolio. If you look at KUKA's core business historically, to my left, you have the CEO of the robot company, so we make robots. To my right, you have the CEO of the systems company who integrates processes and uses robots to do welding, build line manufacturing, and so on that Till was alluding to earlier. So we're a robot and process company. As we start to connect these robots to the internet, we essentially start to create these intelligent machines that Till has alluded to. And you can already see that in the portfolio of KUKA's robots today and some of our investments in technologies like Nebbiolo, which essentially allow us to take a robot, the processes that we create, and connect them to the cloud. Now, once you've done that, you essentially have systems of connected, intelligent, optimizable machines in a digital domain. Now, the key to extracting value through all of this is when we can take systems of systems and connect them together. So if I can take my welding system, which is consuming raw material, and connect it to my logistics system so that I can make a purchase at the appropriate time so that the supply I need to do welding shows up at exactly the right time with the minimal amount of cost, then I'm optimizing the whole system for my end user. And it's our goal to evolve KUKA's product portfolio from a company of robots and processes to a company that optimizes systems of systems using cloud technology. At the same time, we'll continue the drumbeat of always trying to expand the breadth of our portfolio and all of the things that we do so that our robot range will have new robots like the one we saw with Franca or the KR3. So if you look at these sorts of ecosystems, how do we view fundamentally what we're trying to do? We're going to create intelligent machines, and Stefan's company is going to do an excellent job of that. We're going to have services, and Larry's company is going to do an excellent job of that. But we literally want to connect all of that seamlessly using technology with the cloud at the center so that we can take business action. Till was alluding to these partnerships that we've been making. And so if you look at a company like Salesforce, really they're a customer-centric business action cloud. So if I'm able to do things like, hey, my robot's going to break down for this customer, it talks to the internet and says, hey, I'm breaking down. You go into Salesforce and you say, ah, I need to do something about that, so I'm going to go ahead and schedule a service ticket so that some people can get up out of their desk and go down to the robot and help it out. So that's a simple connection of an intelligent machine to a business action connecting a thing to people. So in addition to these cloud-centric points of view, we will always have innovations driving all of our product portfolio. And really, the ones I'm going to highlight here fundamentally unlock new opportunity and new capabilities where robots can service things they've never been able to do before. KUKA was a world leader in human-robot collaboration. I like to think of it as freeing the robots from their cages. Once they're out of the cage and out of the factory, they can service more use cases where we can assist people to avoid repetitive stress and repetitive injury. And at the same time, we're going to continue to innovate in the ability to have these robots not only have force feedback, but use things like roboception to detect collisions before they occur. Similar to unlocking the robots from their fences is giving them the ability to be flexible. As soon as you have a flexible and mobile robot platform, you can address a far wider variety of use cases, ranging from giant platforms carrying big parts of airplanes around to smaller things where you're navigating a space and just using less space for a smart factory, kind of like what we have out here with the cell phone laser engraver, where we have mobile robots moving around the material rather than your traditional line flow. We view these two things as expanding the serviceable markets of our core robots, and we'll continue to invest in state-of-the-art technology like swarm-based navigation, which is an innovative and unique way to map out a space and allow robots to move around inside of it. Whoop. So this is a little more detail on what we consider to be digital domains. As Till alluded to, the smart players in Industry 4.0 are going to have to call their shot about which technologies do we build, which standards do we adopt, and who are our ecosystem partners. We believe this combination of a edge cloud controller or the Nebbiolo fog is fundamentally important, because if you go into the factory of today where essentially security is ensured through obscurity and no connection to the outside world, and say, hey, I'd like to take everything about your robot data and push it into the cloud in Oregon with Amazon, you reach a little bit of conservatism and adoption. So a critical part of our technology investment is to be able to have a partner like Nebbiolo that can securely, reliably connect data from the edge into the cloud with some of the world's best security, so that we can, with confidence, offer our customers the belief that they can enjoy the benefits of the Industry 4.0, the capabilities of the cloud, and do so securely and reliably with KUKA as their partner. So at the end of the day, it's really about what sort of customer benefit are we creating. Till elaborated and enumerated several of these. I think fundamentally the most important elements for me are that you can make better decisions faster, you can improve your times to market, you can optimize your process, your efficiency, and deliver better results. At the same time, KUKA benefits in its ability to optimize its own robots so that we can have better awareness of your process and create more ready-to-use solutions like Stefan was alluding to earlier. So I'm not going to go into too much detail. I think Till did an excellent job covering this. I wanted to spend a little bit of time elaborating Emphasis as a cloud partner as well as Salesforce as a cloud partner. Emphasis has a huge bench of software talent traditionally focused on IT, and has had a major emphasis of late in building up OT expertise. They have a open source based but customized big data platform that allows you to run extremely large scale big data analytics on the largest amounts of data you could possibly conceive. So for example, if we have robots with cameras on them taking pictures at extremely high rates, it's going to generate gigabytes, terabytes, petabytes of data. But if we can run algorithms across that that do object characterization, can look at this room and can immediately identify you and who you are in this extremely large algorithmic set, we're able to do things like better have a robot navigate around if I say, go to that guy there. It just follows on over and does that. That's an example of the kind of power you get with these big data platforms. We view emphasis fundamentally as about optimizing the process and efficiency in doing these analytics at this layer in our stack. At the same time, Salesforce is also a cloud provider, also has a industrial IoT focus. We view them as connecting us and our things to our customers. And I already gave you the example of a service ticket where that's an example where our customer would want us to give service. There's many, many others like that. So as we attack this extremely hyped, extremely rewarding, extremely opportunistic-based opportunity here with Industry 4.0, I wanted to just share how we're going to go about doing that. As always, KUKA, SwissLog will create Industry 4.0-ready intelligent machines. Our robots will be ready for the Internet. Larry and team are going to continue to grow their expertise in welding, riveting, serving our customers in the market they're in. But at the same time, to reference, we're going to have a focused central team as well as company that will guide our Industry 4.0 software solution and very selectively choose ecosystem partners like Infosys, like Salesforce, like our integration channel, to create a network of partners, technology base, and our core businesses so that we can offer the industry's most holistic solution for Industry 4.0. Thank you.
Thank you, David. My name is Larry Drake. I work in the United States. I've been with KUKA for approximately 17 years and came over and worked with Till about, well, when did you come? 6 years ago in Germany? Maybe seven now. I look it, unfortunately. And predominantly my responsibility is in the systems business. So where Stefan talks about componentry and now making it applicable, and David talks about really the Internet of Things, or really the software base of it. The rubber meets the road at the system level because we provide the solution really to our customers. So a little bit, we're in the market side, the face to the customer, and all those efficiencies we talk about and all those things we discuss, how we achieve that really hits it right at really at the system level. And I'm going to go a little bit through, maybe a little focus on the Americas, just because that's my current responsibility, and we're the partner country, which thank you for having us over here. It's been a wonderful time. I didn't get much sleep yet, though, so I have to. I found out you guys like to have a lot of fun in Germany. So real quick, you guys are aware of KUKA. You probably all own stock in our company. You can see our growth in the Americas is pretty substantial, and that is across all of our industries that we serve. We serve predominantly automotive, predominantly body shop automotive, and trim chassis spinal. We don't really deal with the paint shop too much. Aerospace has been an incredible growth curve for us. We have a award for Business Unit of the Year growth, and aerospace has won 3 years in a row, which is complicated. You're building on a much bigger yearly, year-over-year percentage, but they are hitting on the $200 million figure, and 5 years ago was less than 10. So I think that's become a really, really great opportunity for KUKA because it gets us a little bit off the investment curve of pure automotive, which has been an extremely positive one for us, and it gets us more into the mega trends of workforce change in the world, especially in the United States because of the cost of the workforce there. We have other industries. We work in logistics and medical. I won't go into that because, for the most part, it's a pretty strong business that we picked up with SwissLog. I think that's more Till's environment, but we work with them just purely on cost structure. So a little bit deeper into the automotive side of our businesses, which is really what my background personally is. As you can see on the left chart there, Ford Motor Company just rolled out its new F-150 aluminum vehicle. Huge, huge change to the market. I think the major change was because they went to a real risky strategy to go to aluminum. But that's not the most important thing. That was really for fuel consumption, which doesn't mean to be a big thing today. But when they envisioned this, fuel was $4 a gallon in the United States. I know that's not very expensive here in Germany, but in the United States it was. The real message is the left-hand chart. I think the bottom number is $6 billion. It's more, $6 trillion. Yeah, you guys can see numbers better than I'm an engineer. So, But you can see that the Ford F-150, which is built in three assembly plants in the United States, has over $600 trillion, different models it can do. Total flexible. Cars, okay, colors are no big deal, but the options on these vehicles, and this is just a simple vehicle. It's not a car that has it has different derivatives inside of it. And what that drives for us in our production systems is pure flexibility. And for the most part, all of our customers ask for a quantity of one. We don't run a bunch of white cars, a bunch of red cars, a bunch of blue cars. We have to run a four-door, a two-door, a hatchback, whatever the requirement is, one for one. So our tooling has to be completely flexible, station to station, cycle time to cycle time. Extremely complicated with enormous amounts of data that it has to talk to. And I'll talk a little bit to how David's platform is going to help us. Maybe majorly change that, how the hardware communication will go. You can see the chart to the right is predominantly the amount of models in the United States. And you can see it hasn't grown much. Some car companies went out of business during the downturn. General Motors cut off three or four of their divisions. Now they're bringing themselves back up in just three or four, Buick, Chevy, and Cadillac. So you can see there's not a major change to that, but you'll see it's driving incredible flexibility on the options and derivatives that they do. This was a chart that we showed earlier to the press because it's important to understand. We have had tremendous growth in the automotive industry, and we're a capital investment company on the system side, and we're not even nominal right now. We've been growing in a curve that's been below average to the SAR factors of the world. So at the end of the day, if you look at the curve there, yeah, we had some tough times prior, but we really grew in that downturn. And now we're just back to getting our head above water from our customer's perspective. And let's talk specifically about the United States. GM, Ford, Chrysler, Volvo's putting a plant there. BMW is expanding their plant. Daimler's expanding their plant. Daimler's expanding their truck services that we just won that contract just recently. And the main driver of all this change in the United States is the F-150. And most people don't conceptually think this, but it is the biggest profit driver for Ford Motor Company. You can probably see it in their books. You guys look at that stuff more than I do. And unfortunately, our colleagues at Ram, which was Dodge, and GMC have to follow that surge. And you can see they've lost market share. So those new cars, in this case trucks, need to come out immediately. And we're starting to work on those programs right now, and they have seven plants at General Motors and three plants at Jeep and two plants at Dodge Truck that will have to be completely retooled up in the next 2 years. So backlog of business and capital investments is dramatic. And I would say the main thing that I've seen in this last year compared to the past was these guys have money. They're sitting on pretty good profits, and they're funded programs. Usually we wait for what we call PA, product approval, a program approval from the board, and they basically approve these. So they're already on the docket. We just got released on a couple of the big truck programs I told till recently. So that's a pretty simple thing with the current car companies. But we're not even talking about the Teslas of the world or the Apples, the Googles, all these guys that want to jump into this space, you know, to really drive a completely new different investment curve. Going back to what Till said, they're looking at a completely different buy model. Instead of us giving them a system and walking away, now they want to say, I want to buy 1,000 weld spots, or I want to buy X amount of value added to the vehicle. There's no value added to moving a vehicle. There's only value added to weld it or to make more sub-assemblies to it. There's five different new car companies in the United States that are coming up, Faraday Futures and a bunch of new guys that are funded by the Chinese. So you'll see a tremendous amount of cap investment over that curve in the next, let's say, 12 to 14 months. Okay, these are things we've all talked about. These are the big drivers in our industry. Those drivers are driving our customers' requirements, autonomous navigation, battery electric vehicles, all the connectivity with our vehicles. That drives, let's say, a complete new design of the vehicle to be more acceptable to electronic vehicles and communications. Not so much the body as we know it, what we do at KUKA, but a tremendous amount in the interiors. New business models, it's interesting. In my notes here, I was trying to say, okay, how do I explain this side? Because it's really a driver of how does the value happen at the customer? Where does the money come from? Everybody talks about, I love David's comment when I first met him not too long ago. I said, what is Industry 4.0? I'm going to use your comment. It's a solution looking for a problem. And I thought, oh, that's a great statement. And until I really started working with this, with these gentlemen at this table, we really can show value with that. For the first time, I see where we can get real dollar figures. And I could say to our customers, I can gain your efficiency by X percentage, and I can show you how I can do it, and I can show you how you get your return on that investment. And it's a dramatic investment, because in a production facility, if I gain 0.01% of efficiency, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars to the EBIT line. And it's just pure efficiency. I can build a car instead of 92.4% efficiency, I build it to 92.5% efficiency. And we can show real data now for the first time where we can really, really give them that ROI. And so they work with less hours per vehicle, which is their drivers in the world. That's like the big J.D. Powers in the Harbor Report. Really hours per vehicle we drive down with that efficiency, that big data play. So in the past, in the United States, I'll focus on that and a little bit about Europe. We're basically a high-volume, low-derivative, not so much low models, but a derivative, two-door, four-door coupe vehicle on the same assembly line, fairly flexible, running 60 jobs an hour to 80 jobs an hour, maybe 90 jobs an hour. The future will be highly flexible, highly sophisticated, one-for-one models, and it has to still be cheap. There's no way our customers are going to pay for more. It's just not going to happen. We've been quoting trying to get more. We get a fairly decent valuation with our customers because we're KUKA, but they're not going to pay more just for it. We're going to pay for efficiency. And that's really where we're driving our holistic future right here, is really putting together the product itself. Forget that. We're going to be an applications company. We're going to be a data company. We're going to be a system solution company, not just a robot. We're going to drop our tool off and walk away from you. We're with you for the long haul. 10 years, KTPO is a good example, which I'll talk about in a little bit. So this is an incredible change. You'll see a production line 5 years from now. It won't look much different than the one on the left-hand side. No different than it was 5-6 years ago. We have a couple new technologies we're driving with pulse technology and a few other transfer systems. But overall, the robot, do you think the robot's going to change much stuff?
No, not really.
I mean, the industrial robot's going to look the same. It's going to have maybe a little more capacity or capability or accuracy or those kind of things. But overall, we still have to put a weld in a car. We still have to put a ribbon in a vehicle or an airplane. And the major change that we see in my world in the system side is a robot today only knows its own little world. And Stefan could be a robot right, or David could be a robot right next to me, and I don't know he's there. I only tell this robot there is one there, and don't talk to it. Don't go in his space. It's called the robot zones. In the future, with this technology, I'll know what he's doing, just like a human does. If he's over there, hey, I can go into his space, and I can work. Huge efficiency gain. And if I'm out of his space, and he knows it, because our control architecture will allow that, he can completely dive into that space and just gain that 0.5%. And that 0.5% is millions. It's not thousands, it's millions if you do the math. And that will be the major change. I put a couple slides in here in their movies. It's typical American movie star stuff. So it's always good. I have to show movies, I told Andreas. So it's we did a huge program for the Boeing 777. I'm sure you've all heard about it, and it's been a great success for us. But it was taking the technology we use in automotive and applying it to a much larger scale. And it's completely there's three critical things we did with this. Boeing came to us and said, I don't want any monuments on the floor, nothing. I want a clean plant floor. I can move my airplane from Everett, Washington to South Carolina, and I want to do it in 6 months. I got to move my whole production system, so I can't have monuments. Second thing they said, I can't have any crane moves. Typical airplanes are built in crane moves. I can't have those. It's too dangerous, and it slows my production system down. And I can't have any humans doing the hard work that Stefan was showing, because we have too many injuries, way too many injuries bucking rivets. So, okay, we started with those cornerstones, and we came up with, I'll show you this basic system, if it runs. I hope it will.
It's a new method for building Boeing's 777 fuselages, an advanced manufacturing approach to improve workplace safety and increase product quality. It's known as Fuselage Automated Upright Build.
Very flexible system.
Or FAUB. FAUB is in its testing phase, as seen here. Automated guided robots designed for Boeing by KUKA Systems will eventually put panels of the fuselage together, drilling and filling more than 60,000 fasteners. Currently, much of that work is done by hand, with mechanics on each side of the fuselage. Mechanics Lindsay Roby and Steve Blanchett simulate the process.
We have two people inside and outside.
I was simulating working on the outside of the airplane. My partner, Lindsay, was bucking the rivets from what would be the inside.
You're shooting rivets all day.
It's very repetitive. It's really hard on your shoulders. It's hard on your hands.
We want to make sure that our mechanics are as safe as possible.
Elizabeth Lund, Vice President and General Manager of the 777 program, says more than half of all injuries on the program are a result of this repetitive, stressful work. FOB will eventually do a majority of the fastening, giving mechanics other opportunities. Lund says they'll be trained in new skills.
So that they can learn to operate the new equipment. They can run the equipment, maintain the equipment, and ensure that our fuselages are built with 100% quality.
FOB will also be used to help build the 777X. It will be the largest and most efficient twin-engine jet in the world, extending the 777 family's legacy well into the future. FOB is another facet of advanced manufacturing on the 777 program, already seen with what's known as the automated spray method, a new way to paint wings that reduces employee exposure to chemicals and ergonomic issues and provides a precise application of paint. FOB will continue the goal of first-pass quality.
So these fasteners were just installed in...
Fasteners that meet strict quality standards.
That's exactly what we're looking for. Another aspect of this FOB program is that everything is mobile.
Through technology known as automated guided vehicles, or AGVs, the AGVs will move the components of FOB into position, including work stands and fuselages, and the robotic arms that will drill and insert fasteners.
Save so much time and it saves our bodies.
While also reducing build time to stay competitive and meet the ever-growing demand from customers.
Well, this clearly was a Boeing clip, not a KUKA clip. But it points out really taking the whole holistic view of KUKA with our robots, our AGVs, our system technology, our data technology, our navigation systems. It was a whole complete, we actually won a huge awards for this, mostly because we used all of KUKA completely as, I would say, the first big major system where we did that. And just to give you an idea of the efficiency we're talking about, currently they build that fuselage, it took 19 days in the normal rate tools they do in aircraft. We can do this in about 7.5 days now. So just purely, and then of course they have 740 different, I think, backlog orders, so they can pull their revenue, let's say, ahead. One thing I think is great, and I'm going to wrap up with this slide. It's one of the best things I've ever done in my life because I work with great people on it. You guys have heard KUKA Toledo Production Systems. We build the Jeep for Chrysler, and probably will continue to do that. We have a long-term contract. And it is the reason. Okay, this is probably a little selfish for me, but it is the reason I think we're well-positioned for this 4.0 play. If you take a look at having all the pieces we have, mechatronics, I would say in the top in the world with our robot. Our electronics and our software, probably tops in the world. Now with Dave coming on board, that can only get better. We have huge solutions business, just like we brought this to Boeing and to all of our customers. We're a solutions company. We're not a tooling company. We're not a robot company. We're a solutions company. If you add to that our production, we have our own production facility where we can live what our customers breathe. We give them exactly what they want, and we can test everything we want to test. David's got his people in there now wiring up our complete plant so we really understand how we do that. And when you add that, the next really revolution in our world is logistics, where you tie logistics food chain all the way back to the time they make that part, and you optimize that. If you think about the amount of money that's in an airplane whip, it's in the trillions of dollars of whip. Airplane wings sitting around the world, and every single part is in the millions and millions of parts. And if we can optimize that alone, it's a massive play from a pure efficiency play. And I want to show you this movie. It's really about our KTPO thing, and it talks about really the sophistication and the wiring and how that plant runs. And you have to understand this plant's 8 years old. So the technology you're looking at is going to be 8 years old, but it's still completely, I would call, state of the art.
Auto assembly lines were built in the early 1900s. They could manufacture a car in a little over 90 minutes. It was an unprecedented technical achievement. Today, we build what you see here in 82 seconds. I'm Jake Lottiser, Managing Director of KUKA Toledo Production Operations. We build the body of the Jeep Wrangler using an intelligence system that operates 246 robots connected to 33 control processors that manage and monitor over 60,000 discrete points on the shop floor. comprehensive system is fast, efficient, and robust. We've achieved this by building a connected system that integrates our operations on the plant floor with the controlling information systems, which allows for real-time reporting and quick decision-making. The system begins with Windows servers in the control room that maintain constant communication with the shop floor. Next, 10 dedicated Windows servers are used to manage the incredibly complex data flow to and from the manufacturing execution system. This network of servers includes a Microsoft SQL server cluster, two Windows Server application clusters, and four standalone Windows servers. We chose to use our intelligent system with Windows embedded because we require reliable, stable, enterprise-grade manufacturing platform with a comprehensive developer ecosystem. With this solution, we are versatile enough to build a variety of Jeep models throughout the hour. Our intelligent system gives us the power to analyze our production schedules, machine tolerances, and operational efficiencies from anywhere at any time. We wanted to build the most intelligent and efficient manufacturing facility in the world. That's why we chose Microsoft.
So clearly that was a Microsoft clip, not a KUKA clip. And the main message for that clearly is that we are already wired. We already know how to do it. We already feel it. We breathe it. We every day have to make it. And the guys talk about it at the production facility. It's a heartbeat. We have to deliver a vehicle every 92 seconds. And if we don't, we're penalized for that. So we love it. We understand it. We have now the opportunity to take an 8-year-old plant with our next generation and really apply the next technology level. So with that, I'd like to hand it back to my colleague over here, and thank you for your time and your patience.